Welcome to Deadhouse. I'm Dylan.
And I'm Billy Blue.
Billy Blue. Well, that's a good one. I like that.
Didn't have one for the Whale of episode because, not going to lie, I half forgot. Mm-hmm. But also because we weren't doing a single movie.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. Like, you could have just replied by going, oh, woo! But that would have been a bit on the nose.
All right. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good man. Really good, actually.
I was
hella tired yesterday, and I still woke up before 6 a.m. today, but I got my act together, finished the book I was reading, went to the markets, and now
what was
I'm here.
The book?
Scrublands by Chris Hammer.
That's right, yeah.
Australian author.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, I think there's a few of them now, and it's been adapted into a show, so I'm late to the party, but it was very good.
Nice.
I recommend it. Picked it up secondhand for like $2, so.
Contrast from my reading experience, I'm still trying to get through the ruins.
Yeah.
It's not a bad read.
Okay. To be fair, though, that's the one you said there's no chapters, though, right?
Yeah. I've just grabbed the book. There's no chapters, and it's quite a big book. I don't know. It's how many like pages or words or anything like that. But it feels like a slog, and I don't like the characters.
You know what would be a torturous idea?
What?
A book without page numbers.
Oh God.
I'm sure it's been done. Someone would have done that.
But anyway, it's got to a good enough part. I just need to stick with it. I'm going camping next weekend, and so I'm just gonna be laying in my hammock on the beach, and I'm maybe going to try and finish it.
No distractions. Read it uninterrupted in the sunlight.
Yeah, might take another book just in case. I get too bored of that one.
Good call. You know what else I've done this week is my first Arrow video order arrived. They're a British independent distributor, and they have a lot of like cult classics on Blu-ray with like cool commissioned new art and stuff like that. And I got, I think, Carrie, the original, Ring, the original, The Stuff, and The Exorcist 3.
Damn.
In an Easter sale.
Okay.
And all of that, with shipping from UK, came to like $80 converted.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
But for how many was it? Was it 4 or 5?
Yeah, 4 Blu-rays, yeah.
Damn.
And good ones at that. And so recommend Arrow Video. Check out their site. But on that note, I also bought a book called Neon Void by Matt Ryan Tobin, who I think I've mentioned on the pod before. He's one of my favorite graphic artists. Used to sing for Dead and Divine and Ritual. And it's essentially a collection of his work for the last 10 years because he does like new commissioned artwork for horror re-releases and stuff like that. And it was $50 USD.
Okay.
So
was that like $70 Australian?
That was shipping was $70 USD. So
what
the shipping was more than the book itself.
Jesus.
So after the conversion with shipping, it cost me $200.
What the fuck?
Only a pre-order.
Why'd you get it?
Because he's one of my favorite artists and I love his work. He does like art for some of my favorite films. And I knew I'd regret it if I didn't get it. But the fact that the book itself is a quarter of what I paid is fucking rough.
That's painful.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you had $200 burning a hole in your pocket.
Only just in my fun account, in that specific spendings account. So no fun buying for me for a while. But
gonna have to make coffees at home.
Yeah, that's right. What about you, my friend? What's the week entailed?
Not much. I had a very lazy day yesterday and kind of just watched movies all day. Mm-hmm. You know what I finally watched? I don't know if it's been on your radar at all, but it's been on my list for a while. Freaky.
Okay. Freaky,
With Vince Vaughn and a lady whose name I cannot remember.
Remind me what that film's about. It sounds familiar.
It's like a horror comedy where Vince Vaughn is a serial killer. Like one of the big silent Michael Myers types. And he accidentally swaps bodies with a teenage girl.
Oh.
So it's like Freaky Friday meets Friday the 13th or Halloween. Yeah, Halloween would be a better one.
Oh, that's and really
it's just,
weird.
It is such a strange movie. It was pretty funny.
Okay.
In my opinion, it wasn't like scary. It's definitely more of like a teen comedy movie. But I thought it was good.
Yeah,
and
wow.
I like Vince Vaughn, and it was good seeing him in a like comedy role, but in a also serious like serial killer role.
But better than Psycho.
I mean, most of the movie, it's Vince Vaughn running around acting like a teenage girl.
Yeah, okay.
What's more to love?
That does sound kind of interesting. All right. Yeah, cool. Speaking of films, today we're reviewing something that's a bit more in your wheelhouse, I would say. We're talking about I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yep. The old Phineas and Ferb, I Know What We're Doing Today.
The classic from 1997. You seem to be real into the 90s and the early 2000s films, which was kind of like a, I don't know, blackout period for me.
Yeah,
there's like select few.
I don't know what it is. It might just be because that's like they're the ones I started watching when I delved into horror. I just, they were the ones that we happened to have on DVD at home, or they're the ones I've heard about and decided to watch.
Yeah.
So this is a weird one. 1997, the best thing to come out of that year. For those who don't know, that's the year we were born.
And I mean, we were just talking about films that might have come out in the early 2000s that we would have seen at the cinemas before we started rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I've been told the first film I saw at the movies was Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets. And that was 2002.
Yeah.
And what did you say you thought yours was?
I think mine was, well, the earliest one I remember was Star Wars 3.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
But that was, like, that was 2000. What I can't, it looked it up a minute ago. 2005 or something
like that. Yeah.
But yours was 2002. So your parents took you to the cinema when you were five.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for it.
Okay. I don't think I ever went to the cinema when I was that young.
Well, I mean, we looked at 2002 films and it was a fucking, it was full of bangers. There was what? The OG Spider-Man, Signs.
Yep.
But yeah, so I know what you did last summer. And I've mentioned on the pod before that, like, I didn't think much of this film. I will admit, having rewatched it, because I had only seen it once before years ago, it's better than I remember. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it's a weird movie, and I think it suffers because of its own reputation. Like, it's compared too much to Scream for obvious reasons. It's got the same writer, Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, 90s slasher.
But, like, it's funny and weird because he wrote this one before Scream.
Yeah,
just,
I read
nobody
that.
Wanted it. Nobody, it, I don't know. They just, everyone passed on it. So he kind of shelved it. And then after the success of Scream, all of a sudden they wanted his other work. And so they rushed this into production.
Yeah. And honestly, it would have been better, I think, career trajectory wise, if this was released first, because then they could have seen Scream as an improvement given how like meta it is.
That's what I mean. It's like anyone who watches this knowing that, like, they're going into it like, oh, this is the guy who wrote Scream. But then all you get is this, like, kind of stereotypical slasher that's using all the same tropes and in the genre.
Yeah. See, admittedly, it, like you said, it has been parodied and referenced a lot, but for good reason, because there are a lot of things in this film where I was like, oh, so that's where this other film got that from.
Is that the case, or is it just they were already established tropes? Like, give me some examples. What do you mean?
I don't know. I guess I've probably got notes further down here. I don't want to, like, scroll through and try and
identify
them. Throwing
it at you too early.
One thing I did like was the whole, like, slicker and ice pick thing. I think this was maybe one of the last horror films that had, like, recognizable outfit and murder weapon of a killer.
Okay, yeah.
Because these days it's just like a regular person with a gun or a knife, or a crazy killer with like a mask on. But this was the last thing that, like, it was its own kind of trope, if you know what I mean. Like, Scream had the cloak with the face and the hunting knife.
Mm-hmm.
You had all the classics of the 80s and 70s. But I feel like post 2000, there wasn't, like, sure, you had the baby face mask of Happy Death Day, and you've got like the mask from Thanksgiving and stuff like that, but they're just not as memorable, I don't think.
Yeah, I kind of get what you mean. It's like in movies post 2000, it's just a costume, whereas in pre 2000, it's a character.
Yeah.
Like, the whole character is the slicker of the eye and the ice hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
I think that's what I mean. I guess for people who haven't seen this, we'll give them a pitch. So, in a nutshell, four young friends are stalked by a mysterious killer a year after covering up a hit and run.
Beautiful. Very succinct.
Yeah.
No spoilers, which this movie, it's got a twist, I guess, but it's kind of also convoluted. I remember the first time I ever watched it.
Hella convoluted.
First time I ever watched it, I did get a little bit confused because I might not have been paying enough attention to it.
I suffered from that this time around as well. I don't remember how deep it got. And I remember I watched it yesterday. The credits started rolling. I turned to my dad and I was like, who the hell is that guy? Like, I don't know, like, who the killer is.
So if we give a little bit of a brief, more in-depth rundown. So yeah, so these four friends commit a hit and run. Well, not a hit and run. They accidentally hit someone with a car and they think he's dead. So they throw him in the water. So that's that person.
Mm-hmm.
They think they killed a teenage boy that went to, I think, their high school or something. But then later you find out that someone else had already killed that boy and they hit and thought they killed the man who killed that boy. I think I've just made it more confusing. So the man who they hit is the one going to kill him.
Yeah.
After he had already killed the other boy. But then it also, like, they inject this... Well, there's several red herrings they try to put throughout the movie.
Mm.
But then they inject a tiny subplot of this Billy Blue character that went and visited the sister of the boy they think they hit.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that was one of the main characters, like, pretending to be this guy named Billy Blue just to talk to the girl.
Yeah.
Because he felt guilty.
Yeah.
And so they, at the end of the movie, they, like, try to make that as a reveal. So then you think, oh, it is him. He was in the main group the whole time, which is... probably in people's minds coming off the back of a Scream of like, oh, we've got four teenagers. One of them has to be the killer.
Yeah, it becomes like a whodunit.
Yeah, well, the whole thing's definitely a whodunit.
Honestly, I think, like you said, it's too convoluted for what it was.
Yeah, yeah. It, I don't know, maybe it makes more sense when you watch it than so, trying to explain it.
Yeah, so I guess we'll go into a bit of background before we delve into the story a bit more. So it was directed by Jim Gillespie. Written by Kevin Williamson, the man behind Scream, as you said. And I heard they got sued because the poster said from the creator of Scream.
Yep.
And New Line or whoever was like, well, that was actually Wes Craven. And they won.
Yeah. Well, what does creator mean, though? Because, so Kevin Williamson wrote the screenplay of Scream? Or did he... Because then, at that point, he is the creator of Scream.
Yeah.
Like, he wrote it.
Using the word like creator or maker, that's too ambiguous, I think. That's why nowadays you see posters that say producer of or director of or writer of.
Like, it's hard to say who really created it. Like, Kevin Williamson might have created the idea of Scream, but the actual IP of Scream was created by Wes Craven.
Yeah. So I would say, unless you're one of those sort of auteur filmmakers who is like, writer, director, and editor, it's probably easier to just say what exact role they had in the byline.
But I think it's funny that, like, they sued and won, but this was adapted loosely from a book called I Know What You Did Last Summer, and apparently the author of that didn't even know they were making it. But I don't think she sued them.
No, like you said, it was based on a 1973 novel by Lois Duncan of the same name. And actually, I didn't realize that was based on novel till... I was watching this yesterday and Mum's like, oh, I read that book when I was in high school.
Oh, wow, okay.
I was like, oh, there you go.
It didn't come up until my research and I'd never heard of the book part of this.
Yeah, and apparently the author, Lois Duncan, denounced this adaptation because her actual daughter was murdered by an unknown killer in 1989.
Yeah, okay.
So even though she wrote the book before those events, and I think in the book no one actually dies.
Yeah, I did read that. They're stalked
by like a creepy guy.
And it's less of a horror and it's more of kind of like a crime thriller, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. So I guess just another instance of the author not approving the adaptation.
Yep.
And
but it's also, yeah, it's a loose adaptation. Like, it takes the name and it takes the general setup. But then I think from there, it just veers off and just does its own thing.
Yeah, that's like, I liked in the Howling, they say, inspired by the novel by, not based on.
Yeah, I much prefer that. I like inspired by, because that's perfect. It's like, hey, I see this thing, I'm going to use elements.
Yeah.
Not, you know, from real events, based on real events.
Yeah, and then you're still, you know, paying credit where it's due to the author, but also not giving fans of the book, you know, you're not promising them exactly what they're expecting.
Yeah.
I agree. So, starring a hella 90s cast as well.
Oh, boy.
And a lot of three words and names. We've got Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillip, Freddie Prinze Jr., and for some reason, Johnny Galecki, Leonard from Big Bang.
And Anne Hesh.
Yeah, and Anne Hesh, yeah. I forgot Galecki was in this, to be honest, until I rewatched it.
I always do.
And there's a lot of crossover. Like, I'm pretty sure Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillip were in Cruel Intentions together with Reese Witherspoon, who I think was dating Ryan Phillip at the time.
Yeah, okay. A lot of connections.
Yeah, and Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar, of course, were in Scooby-Doo together.
Beautiful.
Who had Matthew Lillard, who was in Scream.
Everything was connected back then.
6 degrees of separation.
And because they also, after this movie, I think they got together, married, had some kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If you didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're still together. I somehow doubt it, knowing Hollywood relationships. But they got together after this movie.
That's funny.
And I think also, like, the reason Johnny Galecki, the Big Bang guy, is in this is because he was either a childhood or a high school friend of Jennifer Love Hewitt.
And so
she got him the gig.
Yeah, that's funny. I also like that he's the son in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
I didn't even realize that.
Oh, okay. That's really wild. Yeah, Russ. It's funny.
I like him in everything except for The Big Bang Theory.
Dude.
I hate that show.
Any sitcom with canned laughter, except for Seinfeld, I hate. Seinfeld for me is the exception because the jokes are actually witty.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
But I know you love Friends, so...
I don't love Friends. The older I get, the less I like Friends.
Okay. I'm still yet to see an entire episode.
Oh my, okay.
I Know What You Did Last Summer. I can't fucking say that. It's too long. In all my notes, I just did the acronym. Know What You Did Last Summer.
What's the acronym?
Oh, just like IKW, blah, blah, blah.
We'll just call it Last Summer.
Okay. Last Summer, I like that. Last Summer was made on a budget of $17 million. And grossed $125.5 million. So, despite the later critical reception of it, it did well on release.
Yeah, okay.
The killer in this was inspired by the Hookman urban legend, which reminded me so much of Candyman, the way they're describing the hook for a hand.
Yeah, that starting scene, well, not starting scene, the scene at the start of the movie where
like
they're
the campfire?
On the beach and just talking about urban legends, and it's like, no, it happened this way, no, it happened this way.
Yeah, the fact that urban legend... and Candyman were also late 90s films. Just kind of, I feel like, was riding that wave.
Yep.
And the lead actresses, so Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sarah Michelle Gellar, actually auditioned for each other's roles.
Okay, that's interesting.
Which I can't see. I think it was a wise casting choice.
I can't see that at all.
Yeah. Just kind of funny.
Yeah, whack.
And
I think it was also the same year that Buffy the Vampire Slayer came out, right?
97? Yep, yeah, maybe.
Okay.
It would have been mid to late 90s.
I think it was a big year for Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. Well, she's been in a few like horror things.
Well, she's in Scream 2, which was also 97.
Yeah, Scream 2. I think she was in one of the Grudge films.
Okay.
American ones, that is. The only bit of background I have production-wise is that gelatin was used for ice cubes
in
the boat scene.
And boy, can you tell.
Oh, yeah.
Watching that scene, it's like, I mean, yeah, sure. It's a movie. They can't have a boat full of ice, but
yeah.
It looks bad.
I
hated it.
I didn't see him like jiggle or anything, but the fact that she didn't react like they were cold, I was like, oh, okay, it's definitely fake.
I don't know. I think they just looked too round, too perfect.
Yeah, okay. Very like transparent.
Yeah.
Not like cloudy.
Yeah.
So I mentioned at the start that I have my reservations about this film, although rewatching it, I can appreciate its value of when it was released.
Mm-hmm.
I've separated my notes into bad points and good points.
Okay.
Because I know going into this, you were like, oh, look, it's a slasher. I don't know how much we're going to have to say on it. And I actually surprised myself. I've got quite a few things to mention that I kind of read into or that I want your opinion on.
Okay.
Or things that I maybe I just got the wrong end of the stick and you could kind of help me out a bit. So I guess the first problem I have with it is that elaborate connection, like we've mentioned, with the killer.
Yep.
And more so for me, it's like they have this whole roundabout thing to explain the body. So it's like, oh, this is why the body was found, because it wasn't actually the dude you killed and that's why he's stalking you again. I feel like it would have been just way easier and possibly more effective to have that they just hit some dude, disposed of his body, wasn't actually dead, and then he just came back to avenge his death.
I could see why you would think that. But at the same token, that's way too expected. Like, that's what you expect going into this movie. And so...
that's what I mean.
It would almost be like a triple bluff. Like, you go into it expecting that, but then so you think they won't do it because it's what you expect.
Mm.
But then they actually just do it. But that, I think that would be...
You think it's a cop-out?
I think it would be a cop-out.
Or lazy writing?
Yeah, it would be 100% lazy writing.
Like, yeah.
They need the convoluted plot because maybe audiences just got too smart.
Mm. But
just audiences are dumb. Let's not give them too much credit. But yeah. You need something in there of, like, Scream just came out, you know?
Yeah, okay.
That, you know, you had that sort of a half-convoluted, you know, plot.
Yeah.
Killers. You need something that the audience is not going to guess. And so, who would have gone into this movie and guessed, I know exactly that it's the father of the, you know, daughter of the girlfriend's, of the boyfriend's person.
And I guess that's kind of how it is in the book, because the book would have needed to be a bit more intricate to keep someone engaged for that long. So, essentially, if you've not seen it, and if you found our previous explanation hard to follow, I've kind of broken it down a bit so I could make sense of it for my notes. So,
okay.
So the main friends, the main group, they believe they kill a guy named David.
Yeah, okay.
Who everyone thinks committed suicide after feeling guilty for accidentally killing his girlfriend, Susie, in a car accident. But Susie's father, Ben, the fisherman, he turns out is the dude in the slicker with the ice pick, murdered David, then got hit and dumped by the main group.
Yes.
That's the gist of it.
That is exactly right, except not everyone thinks the original guy committed suicide.
It's the newspapers.
It's only a small nitpick. I think they said it was an accidental drowning.
Yeah, that's fair. The newspapers say accidental drowning, but the sister believes it was suicide, right?
Yeah, but then she even says she hit it because otherwise they wouldn't pay the insurance out or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a small plot point.
Yeah.
Because that's when you find out that he also got a note.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the same handwriting. Yeah. So.
But congratulations, you did a much better job as explaining it than I did.
Honestly, dude, I had to Google it. I was like looking at the Wikipedia plot to make sure I understood correctly because mm-hmm. that's just how like confusing it was for a slasher.
Maybe we're just dumb.
Maybe. Anyway.
That aside, a confusing contrived plot aside, what else is in the bad?
So I found the killer's motive confusing. As well. So I've got some points here. Mainly, so obviously the killer is targeting this main group of friends because he wants to avenge his death. What? Sorry. avenge his cover up.
Sure.
He's come back. He's pissed off. He wants to pay him back.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Firstly, he waited until the anniversary, the next 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, that's the same thing he did with the boy who killed his daughter, right?
Oh, David.
Like, I think maybe he is just maybe psychotic and, like, he was always going to be a serial killer. He was always going to have, like, his pattern and his motive. And this is just giving him reason to do it. Because he waited a year to kill the boyfriend, the fiancé of his daughter. And then... Yeah, I don't know.
I can see what you're saying. So you reckon it's just like the Michael Myers theory where he just breaks out on Halloween because it's the anniversary of sister's death?
Like that's when he does it?
Okay. I can swallow that. That's fine. Another couple of things is like, so Max, who is played by Galecki, he's killed before the anniversary, like a few days before,
mm-hmm.
but he was also the only potential witness to the attempted murder.
Yep.
So why would Ben, the fisherman, like target him?
I'm not going to make credit for this. I read this. It was someone else's theory that because Ben was watching the group, he would have heard the fight between Ben and I can't remember the other character's name. The dude, rich kid in a singlet.
Oh, Barry.
Barry. When they had a fight and...
Barry and Ray? Like Freddie Prinze Jr.?
No. Barry and Max.
Oh, you said Ben before. That's why I was confused.
When Ben is like following them, because he's obviously stalking them throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, okay.
He would have seen when Max and Barry had like a fight in the fish market. And I think the last thing that Max says is like, I'm going to call the police. And they were saying that like, oh, if he calls the police, you know, there'd be, you know, police around the whole situation and he'd have a harder time enacting his revenge.
Mm.
That's my... I like that theory. That's not my theory. It's one I read, but I like.
I can appreciate that because I suppose when you see his houseboat or his fishing boat at the end, he's got like a wall decorated with newspaper clippings and stuff. So he has been watching them.
Yeah, Max wasn't part of this guy's plan.
Mm.
He was just, this guy's getting in the way of my fun, essentially.
Got ya. So he's like tying up a loose end.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay.
The behind the scenes reason is that they made the movie most of the way through without that in it. And audiences weren't scared of him enough because they didn't think he was threatening because he hadn't killed anyone. At that point, it was more like the book. He was only stalking and sort of taunting them.
Yeah.
But they had no reason to fear for their lives.
Mm.
So they added this in there to be like, all right, he is a killer. They have to be scared of a killer.
Okay.
And I also wanted to make it more bloody.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. So it's more ruthless because there is no real reason other than he's in the way of his plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Also,
and I'm glad they did because it's a good kill.
Like, oh, dude, it's my favorite death.
100%.
Is the first one.
Yeah.
Just hook, like, under the fucking chin.
Yeah. And then drag him over a stove full of cooking crabs.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sick. Also, Barry, the rich, like, footy player kid, he's spared at first. Like, he's later killed. But the first time he's, like, working out at the gym and his car's stolen, then someone tries to mow him down or does mow him down.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, that ominous shot of the killer standing over him. And then the next cut is he's in hospital recovering.
Yeah. Like, I think that just goes more to the, like, he only wants to kill them on the anniversary.
So just, like, scaring them?
At this point, he's scaring them. He's taunting them.
Okay.
He's waiting.
He really wants it to be on the 4th of July.
It's all part of the fun. That's the only day he's allowed to kill.
Yeah, okay. So I guess it's going to tie in then with like your theory of why Max was killed and also killed first is like why the sister and the cop was killed. Again, just they were getting in the way.
Yeah, 100%. They were just getting in the way. Like he's got a list of 4 people to kill and that's who he wants to kill. He just will get other people if he needs to.
Yeah, okay. I can appreciate all of that now. The only thing that was confusing for me is the anniversary, which I guess, look, there was no reason really for Halloween, and I love that film, so
yeah.
I'm happy to overlook it. You mentioned before there's some red herrings in here. I love a good red herring, as listeners will know, but I found these ones were a bit clunky for my liking.
Okay.
It could just be 90s, you know, that's just what it is, but like I found Max to be a bit too obvious, like this seething kind of a character that likes... Julie, the main character. Like, he was too obvious. So, when they killed him off first, I was like, yeah, of course he's not the killer.
Plus, he's the only one you see that knows they were there on that night.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he is the obvious red herring. And so, that's why I think it's good that they kill him first. So, then it kind of gives the audience a, well, that's who the obvious one was. That's who we really thought. Who else could it be?
Yeah, yeah. So, that was fine. Also, Barry and... Julie eventually start to suspect Ray purely because he's now a fisherman, like a year later.
Yep.
So he's got access to like the hook and the slicker and whatever. But, and he is convincing. Like it's a convincing red herring in the fact that he works there. He's the most reserved now of them all, like least really willing to talk about it. But he still has no motive. Like, why would he want to kill them apart from, like, he thinks he's the only one that's guilty about it?
That's one of the reasons it didn't land at all for me. Like, he has zero motive, but also he's Freddie Prinze Jr. And so I don't see Freddie Prinze Jr. as any sort of a killer.
Yeah,
so
I like him. But
I love him. He's great.
He was not at all intimidating in this film.
Yeah, he's so soft-spoken and, like, he's masculine, but not at all masculine. It's kind of weird.
He's built, but he's not hostile like Barry.
Yeah, he just seems too sweet and caring. He could never kill anyone.
Yeah, and you mentioned before like how Billy Blue comes in halfway through as a potential character, but then you find out that was just like an alias for Freddie Prinze Jr., Ray. So that was like a weird kind of red herring because like Billy Blue is not a real person.
The name of a boat.
Yeah, that was interesting. I liked that one. That was my favorite red herring. At first I wondered if maybe Missy, like David, who was like the kid that Ben killed, his sister, like I thought maybe she could have potentially been the killer and they just used like a man in a slicker as a stand-in like fucking Friday the 13th. It's so obviously man hands.
Yeah.
But then she's like had a too feminine build to be that person when you do see the silhouetted figure.
Okay. They were clearly going for her to be a red herring. And I think the way they went about it was the reason I didn't suspect her at all.
Oh, like the outcast with a knife.
It was way too over the top. Yeah. Like even
kind of like the Max one, right? It's too obvious.
Yeah, way too obvious. Like she sort of, when she bursts out with a knife and like she slams on the window at a different point. Mm. It's like they're trying too hard to make her look threatening and crazy when in reality, like... No, she's just a normal person.
Yeah, so that was my qualms. Like, it had a lot of red herrings, but only one for me was kind of believable, and that was a character that didn't even exist. So props for that, I guess.
Yep.
The only other thing I mentioned in, like, my bad column here, which I know I'm dishing it out, but I do have more good points than bad.
Yeah, we're getting the bad out of the way first.
Yeah, yeah. Is Julie, Jennifer Love Hewitt, she's taunted by the killer. But she's never, like, actively pursued. Like, there's no chase scene. Anything that happens to her is not violent. It's just a letter.
Yeah.
And I found that really odd because she's, like, the most vulnerable of the main group. But she also never fights back. Like, even in the final act, like, she just hides on the boat when he's coming for her and Ray has to rescue her.
So what is your actual qualm?
I just found it odd that, like, she's the main character... But she's the one that has the least happen to her. And even that doesn't give her enough motivation to fight. Like, I just didn't like her as a character.
Fair enough. Well, in terms of not much happening to her taunting-wise, my sort of thinking of that is that she had the least to do with him, like, the whole plan of covering his, like, murder up.
Mm.
And so she was just very against it from the beginning. If he was conscious at all, he would, I guess, hear her, know her to like not want to do it. And so
yeah,
that would make his reason for wanting to kill her even less. Like, he'll still kill her, but he doesn't want to taunt her as much.
Yeah, okay.
Like, he wants to, he wants to taunt, him, right? Yeah, he wants to taunt the people that like were the instigators of hiding his body and covering up his murder.
Yeah, true. All right. And I guess into the good. Like you said before, I do like the subversion of expectation despite being released a year after Scream and having a lot of the like 80s slasher tropes. It does start off quite sexualized, like when they're telling the urban legend at the beach and, you know, they're all like sleeping together under the stars. The like first 20 minutes kind of revolve around that kind of tight relationship and all these grandiose plans of going to college and their dream jobs and having a family and just like getting drunk and having sex like teens do, right? But then it cuts like a year later and they've fallen out. So it completely shifts, which I quite like. It's like, okay, here's a slasher. We've pretty much told you what's going to happen by telling this Hookman urban legend. But now we're going to like change it up a bit, throw some plot twists in there, and they're not just horny teens anymore.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. That was cool.
Okay. I very much like that. So in kind of the whole movie is, and I was talking about the themes of it a little bit.
Yeah.
The whole theme of the movie is the loss of, well, you get a lot in a lot of horror movies, like the loss of innocence.
Yeah.
And so that at the beginning of the movie, they start out at these kids, these teens that just want to, you know, have sex and get drunk.
Yep.
They're talking about their future plans, going to college, all the things they're going to do. But then that night, they lose their innocence by killing someone. And then it sort of brings them down to reality. They go off and their plans fail. Like, that, she doesn't become an actress. She's back working at a family's shop. He just becomes a fisherman. She starts failing her grades. And so it's like a reality sets in. And so they're adults now.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sad truth. Like, everything just unravels due to this tragic accident.
Yeah, and then, like, their friendships all fall apart, you know? How many people are still friends with their high school friends?
Yeah, it is kind of some subtle commentary on just life, I guess.
Which is not something you would expect from a movie like this.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I quite liked the different emotional responses you get from each character, particularly because I think as varying audience members, when you go to see a film, it makes at least one of them relatable to the average viewer.
Yeah, okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, they throw out enough, it's like a horoscope, they throw out enough signs and someone will relate to something.
Yeah.
Like, or everyone will relate to something.
Yeah, like Julie is the curious and sensible one. Like, she's the one that's kind of investigating it further a year later when shit starts happening. But like you said, when they first hit the dude, she's the one that's the most like practical and logical. She's like, look, it was an accident. They'll see it was an accident. There's skid marks. The dude in the back dropped the bottle. Like, let's just call the cops. And it's everyone else that kind of covers it up. You've got Helen, who's Sarah Michelle Gellar's character. And she is like this ignorant beauty pageant winner, right? So she's kind of shallow and doesn't really want to have anything to do with it because she's focused on herself. And Barry, who's that hostile jock character. So, you know, some people, when they're confronted with a situation like that, their first initial reaction is to like lash out. So he's that kind of angry character. And then Ray, who like confusingly is played by Freddie Prinze Jr. with his intimidating stature. Charming good looks though. He's kind of like this do-gooder. And, you know, he's a fisherman. He never raises his voice in the film. He never fights back when Barry just walks up and punches him. But he's also the one that's kind of been crippled by this guilt that he's carried for the previous year. And that's sort of how he confides in Julie at the end. So I just found that interesting. Like, if you were faced with a stressful situation, whether your reaction would be, you know, anger or sadness or guilt, or you'd want to find out why it happened, one of these characters will connect with you.
Yeah, for sure. Which one are you? Are you Ray?
Honestly, probably.
I think the majority of people would either be Ray or Julie, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely cast in a light like that's the character you would want to resonate with. Yeah. But yeah, probably Ray, let's be real.
Yeah, because this whole movie is also like what is it, the morality tale where the characters have a choice and they choose wrong, and then the rest of the movie is the consequences of that.
Yeah, that reminded me of Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, me too.
Like, actually, she just chooses to decline the loan for her own like progression in her career. And
I like it better in this one because I think, like I said, in that Drag Me to Hell one, it seemed too forced that that's the obvious right choice. Whereas this one, like, the obvious choice is to call the cops or an ambulance or something.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you don't really know until you're in that situation. Yeah.
Decline alone, you're literally going to hell. But it's interesting, like, talking about, you know, when they squabble over whether to go to the cops or not. There's a line where Ray says, "Oh, it's manslaughter, we're gonna fry." And I found that odd. Like, it's set in North Carolina. I think that opening scene is filmed in California, but the film's set in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have the death penalty in that state, I think, until like the 2000s.
Right.
But would it be capital punishment if it's not premeditated?
I think it's more like he's a scared kid.
Yeah, okay. You know,
like, I think they put that in there. That's what he thinks is going to happen.
Okay.
And so in his mind, he doesn't know. He's just like, well, shit, they're going to, you know, give us the death penalty.
Yeah.
Because that's what a kid would think. I've killed someone, they're going to kill me.
Right. So their kind of incorrect perception of the law is justifying his actions.
Yeah. Or even, yeah, he's kind of just, he's so scared that he's just putting that out there as just out of pure fear.
Mm. I guess on that note, I also like that they hit the dude, think he's dead, check his pulse, nothing's there, his face is all bloody. And then when they get to the dock and they're about to roll him off, he like leaps forward and grabs the tiara off Helen's head. And then they dump him in the water anyway. So it was purely an accident. But when they see he's still alive and then still kick him off into the water, that gave it like intent.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now you're murderers.
But then it turns around at the end as well when they never murdered anyone still because they didn't kill him.
Yeah, luckily though.
Yeah, luckily they didn't kill him. At that point, it's kind of, it goes from manslaughter, or it goes from vehicular manslaughter to he doesn't die, so it's just reckless driving.
Mm-hmm.
But then they dump his body, so it's attempted murder,
mm-hmm.
but they think it's murder. But then at the end, he's still alive, so it was attempted murder. But then it turns into, it was just reckless driving.
Yeah. In the end, if they just killed him, they would have stopped a bunch of murders.
Yeah, exactly. Moral of the story? That's what I think is a bit strange. Moral of the story, make sure he's dead.
If you do a hit and run, finish him off.
Yeah. It's just like, talk to me, you know? She should have killed that kangaroo.
Oh, yeah. Nice tie-in. Yeah, and like I said, the rest of the film is set like a year later, which I kind of like. And she gets the title note, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw that, I was like, how fucking funny would it have been if I posted that as like the socials promo? Here's a clue to what film we're doing.
What could it be?
And then you learn that the body was found 3 weeks later in a fishing net. And like I said, newspapers think it's an accidental drowning. David's sister Missy thinks it's suicide because of the similar note he got. But the main group, they don't know said body was not the dude they killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that kind of fork in the road there. Because there's also a point later where Julie goes back to Missy and straight up confesses. Like, mm-hmm. Oh no, we hit him in the car. It was yeah. murder. I'm so sorry. And she's like, oh, but David didn't have any tattoos. It couldn't have been him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a nice reveal because they kind of linger on that at the start when yeah. they roll him off the dock. And also, she just confesses to this woman that they've murdered someone and covered up for a year. She never goes to the police. And
I think she just thinks they're crazy, maybe.
Okay. Because part of me wondered at that point in the film, because I couldn't remember how it ended, or the twist and the reveal, that maybe she was like an accomplice and in on it.
Yeah, okay.
But I think she's just odd.
Yeah, she's just weird.
Like you said, she thinks they're weird. She's weird. Yeah. Because like, there's all that ominous stuff, like you said, where there's the dead animals on her farm and she's got the bloody knife and she's kind of quirky and sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, maybe she's conspiring or maybe she's getting revenge on the teens because, you know, they killed her brother. But then, like I said before, it wouldn't make sense that the figure in the slicker of the ice pick is mm-hmm. a built man. So, anyway. Also, all my favorite scenes in this film seem to be related to Max. Like, that death was my favorite. But also when Julie stops the car, opens the boot, and his body's in there covered in crabs.
Yep.
That was sick. So she alerts her friends, comes back. They open it, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the killer, like, legit his body was in there covered in crabs, and the killer removed it so it looked like a hallucination, like she was just paranoid and going crazy?
That's clearly what they're going for. It's such a weird part of the movie because you have to maybe suspend a bit of disbelief. I mean, it's kind of,
it's just impractical.
Yeah, it's kind of ambiguous how much time passes between her seeing it and getting back with her friends.
Yeah.
I did read that you can see his car in that scene.
And oh, so okay.
That, And so that kind of hints that he's following her, waits till she runs away and does the cleanup.
God, yeah.
I can't confirm that. That might have just been some idiot on the internet. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like that it kind of sets it up as maybe she is just going crazy though. Like it sort of has this supernatural element to it of maybe something otherworldly is going on. Maybe she's just... is hallucinating, she's seeing things.
Maybe it's like Smile, where she sees it, but no one else does.
Yeah, it's kind of, it opens up, instead of it's a straight up slasher, it's like, introduces just hints of these other elements that could be.
Mm. Reminded me a bit of Jaws, when they find the first body.
Yeah, just the crabs.
Washed ashore. Yeah, but I do like that close up of the crab, like crawling out of the mouth. That was cool.
And then what are your thoughts on the scene directly after that? The most famous scene from this movie.
Oh, the... What does she say? What are you waiting for? Yeah, just get that spiral shot.
Just screams, what are you waiting for? Runs out in the street and starts spinning.
It's kind of cringe, and I don't know how true this is, but I did read that a kid directed that scene because there was like a competition or something where like readers could like win the opportunity to come on set and just choose a scene that would have to stay in the cut. But it's now like the most memorable thing of this film.
Yeah, I wonder what that kid's doing now. What's he? What did he get up to?
He probably directed the third one.
Oh, God.
It is interesting, though, how the killer kind of sabotages each of the characters' passions when he's taunting them. Like, what I mean by that is Barry, the one who's the most hostile, and I like that he confronts Max about the letter when they reveal they got one, but then he's immediately killed afterwards. He is hospitalized after he's hit with his own car when he's a quarterback for a football team. So it's kind of like he's out of the game now for however long.
Well, he was already out of the game. This is after high school.
Okay, right. But I guess his aspirations of being a player, I don't know.
Hmm.
But also...
I saw it as more like his car.
Like his dad's car.
Yeah, he was so upset when they first hit the guy because he's like, look what it fucking did to my car.
Mm.
And now the killer's using his car and destroying it to get to him.
Yeah. And also... the killer cuts Helen's hair and having just won a beauty pageant, you can see how important her appearance will be to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was cool. He's kind of like hitting him where it hurts. And for some reason, Julie just gets a letter.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I mean, look at her. Her life's shit enough. I do like the juxtaposition, if it's not a bit heavy-handed, where in the beginning she's this bright young teen and then a year into college she's like depressed. She's like an art
back
student.
Home.
She just looks like a zombie.
Yeah. That was kind of funny. What was she, an art student? Is that?
Oh, I don't know. She just looks like one. Yeah. She looks like what I expect a dark art student to be.
I do like the pageant when Helen's like delivering her speech and she goes, I want to serve my country through art. And everyone applauds. It's like, fuck, you may as well say I want world peace.
Yeah, which is so stupid because the question was like, in regards to Mother Teresa, like what was your contribution going to be to this community? It's like, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah, weird.
I don't know.
I do like, though, when Barry gets killed on The Miz, when she's kind of being a co-host of the next one. And that reminded me so much of... Is it Scream 2 when it's in the movie theater?
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, stabbed in front of the screen. Everyone just cheers because they think it's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me that vibe, which is rather fitting given the writer. But also, why does the crowd stop Helen?
That is weird. I don't have an explanation for that. That's just the movie needing to be a movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Runs down the center aisle, screaming to turn around, a dude's getting murdered on the balcony, and they're like, no, please calm down, miss. Don't go any further.
And then the fact that the cop is so dismissive, like, what is your fucking job here, dude?
There's blood dripping off the fucking, post of the stairs.
And he doesn't just see that.
Has a quick glance with a flashlight. There's nothing here. You're crazy. Let me drive you home.
And then even when he's driving her home, he's like making fun of her. Like, oh, is the killer? Did he use the same hook that he used to cut your hair off?
It's
like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah. This woman's being terrorized and you're just, giving her shit for it.
It leans too much into like the stupid cop trope that
it's a lot
of
other movies
have. I mean, sure. Yeah.
Although I do like when the sister gets killed or after that, I think. You've got that like mannequin jump scare where it is kind of like mannequins are creepy in general.
Yes.
And they're all like draped in plastic and it's kind of obvious that the dude in the slick is under that next one. But the jump is so sudden and such a shortcut. It like got me, that one. And also another thing that reminded me of another film is when Helen is killed in the alley just like a few meters short of the parade.
That's probably my favorite moment of the movie, I think.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, just because it's so almost like heartbreaking. Like she was that close to getting away.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a bit annoying that she is that close and then stops and turns around for literally no reason.
Yeah.
But just the way it's filmed too, like the cuts between the like roaring parade and her getting slashed, the like crane shot overhead where it shows right next to her the parade and then her getting brutally murdered.
Yeah.
So it's just also good.
Okay. I didn't like that.
Okay.
It reminded me of Trick or Treat though. I think it's when the fake vampire like kills someone and then there's the like celebration right by them. But I think I didn't like it because I didn't actually know if she was killed or not. I just never saw her again in the movies. I'm like, I guess she died because they don't show anything.
There's blood. She's getting hit with a hook.
Because I saw when they show like, when they show an over the shoulder shot and you can see the killer like swinging his arm. It looks like there's a struggle and he's like missing and hitting the wall or whatever. And then you just never see her again. So I was like, okay, I guess she got killed in an alleyway.
Yeah, maybe they meant for it to be ambiguous because then when you're doing the like the final girl circuit at the end, I think, is she one of the people that slides out of the ice?
Yeah. Her and Barry, I think.
Yeah, so I guess they kind of leave that ambiguous so that you can have that moment of like, oh, yeah, she is dead.
That's true. Okay, I can respect that. And then I do like, though, the twist at the end when you find out who the real killer is and they lean into that it could be Ray again, like Barry thought. And then when Julie's running away, he gets like, co-dangled by a random fisherman who turns out to be Ben, the father of the girlfriend of Missy's brother.
Absolutely.
And he's like, oh, go hide on the boat. And then you see it's called Sweet Susie and he unanchors it and he's going to pursue her at sea. And you get the gelatin ice. Ray catches up because Julie can't fend for herself.
Yeah.
And severs his hand in the mast rigging.
I would have liked it better if she was a bit more of a strong character. I think maybe I'm just spoiled with the Wes Craven Final Girls.
Yeah.
But she kind of doesn't do much at all.
That's what I mean. I don't particularly like her. I don't resonate with her. And she seems kind of useless.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I guess she is good at the investigating when she's pulling up the newspaper articles and everything. But yeah, anyway. I do like, though, the end when you get the credits rolling. No. I do like the final scene that's like a year ahead again. And it's like the ominous letter. You get the eerie music and it's just like a pool party invite.
Yep.
That was nice.
Okay. That's where I draw the line. That's if it ended there, I'd be happy.
Oh, okay.
The very last shot is so cheap and shit.
You don't like the sequel bait?
I don't like the sequel bait. I don't like that writing in the mirror was not made by an immortal man. No, but it's so straight and clean. Who the hell writes like that in the mirror?
Also, she turns the hot water on in the shower, lets it fucking steam up like it's a fog machine at a concert, and then just, what, is she going to reach in and turn the cold on? It'd be scalding.
I don't know. But it's just, it's so stupid. The busting through the mirror at the camera, I hated it. It was cheap.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. I just liked the ominous letter.
Yeah, okay.
That was a nice, nice
twist. Also, I'll backtrack to another thing I don't like at all, is when they do, I guess, defeat Ben, they don't. They don't do a single thing. He kills himself. Well, he's not dead, but like when he, somehow when they are fighting, he goes to slash her. But he gets his own hand caught in a rope.
Yeah.
And then that's when fucking Ray hits a switch and it pulls him up and cuts his hand off. And then he falls into the water.
Yeah.
That's so shit. That's so stupid.
Then I think like the cops arrive and I assume that's later.
But like they didn't do anything. He died himself. But he didn't even die. I just hate it.
Okay. So
they didn't do anything to deserve to live.
Okay.
They just got lucky.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So even though Ray might have done like one thing that helped it along, it's not like there was a showdown.
Yeah.
There was a close shave or anything. Okay.
This is the guy that didn't know there was a rope in front of him or behind him.
And if he's a fisherman and that's his boat, you'd think he'd know.
I don't know. That's my main qualm with it. I will give us credit, I think.
Yeah.
We've made it like 50-ish minutes in, depending on the edit.
Mm.
And we've yet to mention Scary Movie. Because watching this movie is impossible now.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I mean. Like, I guess when I said at the start, that example didn't come to mind, but it's been referenced in popular culture since. But like, the film itself isn't much of a standout, yet I guess it was more influential than I thought.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I do think it's funny that like Scary Movie was based on Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer MASH together, which are both Kevin Williamson.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had that in mind or it's just like, hey, here's two like very 90s slashers. Let's smash them together.
Yeah. Was Scary Movie 2000?
Probably.
So I guess they would have only really had like those two in recent years to go by. So,
they chose these, and so, but it's because it's such an accurate sort of mashup of the two movies.
Mm.
Sometimes I've confused and forget what's in the real movie and what's in the scary movie.
That's a friend of mine, Jess, David's other half, does that at work. She'd be like, "Oh, do you remember that part in Scream?" And we're like, "That's Scary Movie." She loves Scream, but often gets them confused. Common mistake, I guess. There's not really too much I can go into technically with this film. I did like the one-shot opening, like the drone shot or the helicopter shot, whatever that was.
Just going across into the coastline.
Yeah, because it kind of like zooms into that sunset over the sea and then like comes right around and meanders down to show this dude that's like sitting on the cliff face. That was just really cool.
That was very cool. There's a lot of crane shots and overhead shots that I like. A lot of like overhead shots that transition to like the front of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very good. I like the way the like the car crash was filmed. That kind of just looked very smooth and nice.
Yep, that was good. Also, the dude's like hanging out the sunroof when it happens. I thought there was going to be like some Hereditary level shit and they're going to like go under a bridge and he gets decapitated.
If only I hated his character.
I did notice though a lot of blue. Like blue set design, blue costuming in particular.
Okay.
And usually...
The name is Billy Blue?
Yeah, I'm guessing that's what they were going for. But it also helped like tie the characters together. Like they were always going to be connected in some way because of this secret.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like whenever you see them, they've like all got some article of blue clothing. Okay. Billy Blue, like you said, would
blue,
probably be
what
the
does
time.
Blue mean? What does blue stand for? Sadness? Coldness?
Yeah, probably sadness. They're all hiding something. So maybe blue signifies like mystery or a secret. I only know it in like cool lighting.
Yeah, okay.
Like a clinical approach to set design. But yeah, just something I noticed. And also it had a pretty great soundtrack. Like my style of music.
I don't even remember it.
It was like 2000s like punk and new metal stuff. There was like Korn, Offspring. I think the opening track when they've got like that one shot was Typo Negative. So yeah, it was just very nostalgic for me.
But not so much a score. It's just mashup of music put in.
Yeah, it's like Scream. They just use... You know, like, what is it? Red Right Hand by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and stuff. Just a lot of like... cool songs that have lines in it that reflect the theme.
Okay.
Which was cool.
Not as cool as having every song with about a werewolf or about the moon.
Have a moon in it. But yeah. Was there a shot you'd frame?
Absolutely not. This is not an artistic at all movie.
Not the like inverted shot of the killer standing over Barry after he hits him with the car?
No. Nothing. Nothing good with this one.
That's fair. The hook through the chin of Leonard from Big Bang. yeah, no, that's fair. Like I said, better than I remembered, and it spawned two sequels. I believe Jennifer Love Hewitt was in the second one.
You know who else was in the second one?
Who?
Jack Black.
What?
He's playing like a Rastafarian.
Oh, Lord.
I think it's also got Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, man.
Because
it's
like an island setting.
That's funny.
It's like Hawaii or something like that.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't know anyone of note in the third one. So what is it? I still know what you did last summer, and then I'll always know?
Yeah. The third one... It didn't have like a cinema run. It was direct to video.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it, but I know that it actually does lean into the supernatural and it goes from being a man killer to they actually have a ghost chasing them.
Right.
But it is apparently just one of the worst movies ever made.
I would not doubt it.
It's terrible quality, terrible writing, terrible acting.
Yeah, I would expect that. It also had an Amazon Prime Video original series in 2021.
Yeah, I think we watched maybe the first one or two episodes of it, and that is all. We didn't feel like continuing.
Because
it was just off the back, we with some friends, we watched like the Scream TV series.
Oh, yeah.
Once that finished, we wanted something in like the same vein.
Yeah.
So we started watching it, but I wasn't into it at all.
I've noticed that. Like, we had the kind of remake or reboot trilogy trend in horror for a while, but now it's like remakes are going more for limited series or television shows.
I think it's opposite. I think we went through the series phase and now they're doing the trilogies.
Oh, okay. Yeah, possibly. Which is interesting. In the Deadheads Facebook group this week, we posted, what secret did you try to keep that was later exposed? We had one comment, which was my mother saying my undying love for Duran Duran.
Which is fair.
I was raised on like 80s pop rock and hair metal. So bands like Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, Motley Crue.
Yeah.
And I think she just, that was like one of her favorite artists growing up as a teenager, and she's been playing them a lot again recently. And fair
enough.
I can imagine that's a guilty pleasure you wouldn't want publicly known.
Yeah, it's a hard question. I mean, this was always going to have a hard question, I think, for this movie.
Right.
But people don't like to spill their secrets, turns out.
Yeah, I was more so thinking just like, what's something that you've done you tried to cover up and your parents found out or something like that?
Yeah, but do you even have an example of that? Because I don't think I do.
I know one time I had a sandwich at school I didn't want to eat, so I hid it in my bag. And then when I got home, I didn't want my folks to know I didn't eat it, so I hid it in like my wardrobe or something, forgot about it. And then after school holidays, we were like clearing out my room and they found it all moldy and shit.
Fuck it.
That was
that's good.
And that's the only example of that. I'm not a fucking slob.
I think we've all been there though.
What about you?
No, I don't think anything comes to mind.
Also probably being like a rapper. Like I used to be like hella anxious about it, like didn't know if I'd be good or anything, and I hid it from my parents and I was like scared of anyone to hear me.
Fair.
Finally recorded something and like played it to people and they're like, "You're actually pretty good."
Oh no, it's meant to be like coming back to bite you. It's like, "Oh, no, you're terrible."
But yeah.
Go back to hiding it.
Yep, that's right. Closeted artist.
But no, that is everything I think I've got to say about this movie.
Yeah, like I said, I surprised myself. I had more to say than I expected. But yeah, I can appreciate you helping me understand some of the creative decisions and plot points in this film. Mm-hmm. Still not, you know, very high on my list of horror films. It was worth the watch for sure. Like, it's a good production.
Yeah, it's got some really good moments in it. Mm. It's got a pretty interesting underlying theme.
Yeah.
And underlying plot. But maybe falls short a couple of times.
Yeah. Too hard to follow, and I would have liked some more gore.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But I think if that is everything, then you can catch us next Monday when we drop the episode on any streaming service. In the meantime, catch us on our Facebook group at Deadheads.
And our social pages, Dead House and Dead House Pod.
There you go. We'll be right back.